You're with Annie on 3CR Saturday Breakfast, and I'll have to say we're up to the last part of the show. It is hard not to understand that the world is teetering on the edge of a climate emergency. At the same time, corporate interests and governments play lip service to this fact. But first, they use the tactic of normalising the coming disaster and follow with greenwashing, wars and repressive laws against activists to maintain business as usual. And last week I collected a couple of snapshots from Europe that give what I think are a chilling aspect to the focus of corporate leaners and cash-strapped countries as they persist in the fossil fuel dance. First up is from an online rally called Climate Goals Held to Ransom. It brought a focus on the insidious ECT, Energy Charter Treaty, and ISDS, Investor State Dispute Settlement System, a process that reveals the lengths that corporate leaners will go to sacrifice human rights and the sustainability of the planet for their own interests. First up is an explanation of the system, followed by Leah Sullivan from War on Want, and then activist and ecologist Kerala Rakiti. You'll know her from her work rescuing refugees in the Mediterranean, and Brenda Akankuta from Uganda. And it finishes, it gives you an understanding of what they're fighting for at the moment. They're working towards persuading countries to not sign the ECT, the Energy Charter Treaty, because it is really stalling the ability to actually deal with the climate emergency and making it all about money. Money for investors, the greedy, greedy investors. So let's hear what they had to say.
The clock is ticking. We must keep coal, oil and gas in the ground to avoid catastrophic global heating. But fossil fuel companies want to keep on profiting and keep on polluting. What most people don't know, if we try to stop them, fossil fuel companies can use secretive corporate courts to sue us. This is because of a mechanism called ISDS in trade deals, which gives corporations the right to sue countries for enacting climate-protecting laws that affect the corporation's profits or potential future profits, even if those laws stand between us and climate breakdown. Over decades, Global South countries have faced an onslaught of ISDS claims over measures to protect indigenous territories and communities from environmental damage caused by mining and fossil fuel extraction. And now, countries are being sued for taking action to meet even their weak international climate goals. Italy, the US, the Netherlands and Slovenia face claims for a combined £13 billion over plans to phase out coal and stop oil rigs and pipelines. That's £13 billion of public money that could be spent supporting people who can't afford energy bills or to repay our huge climate debt to the Global South. And £13 billion is just the beginning. Estimates of potential corporate lawsuits over climate action are in the trillions. Coal, oil and gas companies have already made unimaginable fortunes by driving us towards climate crisis. Now they're demanding huge payments to stop polluting and using the threat of ISDS to delay and prevent climate action. Signing up to ISDS is optional. Countries have removed it from their trade deals before, but the UK includes ISDS in most of its trade deals. The UK still signed up to the climate-destroying Energy Charter Treaty, the ECT, the world's most widely used treaty for ISDS claims. The ECT, along with other trade deals containing ISDS, enable UK corporations to sue countries all over the world for trying to stop climate breakdown.
If we want climate justice, we must call on the UK government to stop ISDS from holding our climate goals to ransom. We must end ISDS.
As I hope the video makes clear, if the record-breaking temperatures we're experiencing now, devastating floods, fires and famines weren't enough to remind us, we are constantly being reminded that climate action is ever more urgent, and scientists are telling us that we need no new oil, coal and gas fields. And according to a new study, nearly half of existing fossil fuel production sites need to be shut down early if global heating is to be limited to 1.5. But against this backdrop, we have the Energy Charter Treaty, which blocks, delays, undermines climate action and makes it massively more expensive. So the Energy Charter Treaty, or the ECT, is an agreement from the 1990s for the energy sector, the rules of which apply to 53 countries, primarily in Europe and Asia. But they have intentions to expand to other parts of Africa and Asia. The ECT includes lots of rules, but cornerstone is something called ISDS, Investor to State Dispute Settlement, which enables foreign investor to sue a country if that country does something, it could be changing a law or policy that affects the profits or potential future profits of the investor. The ISDS mechanism is increasingly being used by fossil fuel corporations to challenge climate policy, and the ECT is what is being used to challenge it. The ECT is the most used treaty for ISDS cases. No trade and investment agreement anywhere in the world has triggered more investor state lawsuits. It has very generous broad clauses for investors, and it contains sunset clauses, which mean that countries can be sued for 20 years after they leave the treaty. The courts that take ISDS cases don't have to consider the obligations of a government to uphold its commitments to climate, to human rights. They don't try to balance public interest with private profit. They only care about the obligations to investors created through the trade deal that allows companies to sue governments for huge sums of money. And the amounts of money that we're talking about are huge and increasing. So it used to be quite unusual to have ISDS awards that went over $1 billion, but that's starting to become more and more common. And the cases that have to do with the fossil fuel sector are some of the biggest. The video briefly mentions five cases against the US, Slovenia, Italy, and the Netherlands, totaling £13 billion. And just to mention the specifics of two of these briefly, one of them against the Netherlands is being taken by fossil fuel companies Uniper and RWE, which set up coal-fired power plants in 2015 and 2016. So that's when the Paris Agreement is being signed. So they know that they're not really viable or profitable into the future. And in spite of that, and in spite of actually being offered compensation by the Dutch government, they're now trying to shift that burden onto the Dutch taxpayer by suing the Dutch people for €2.4 billion. In another case, UK corporation Rockhopper is demanding €275 million from the Italian taxpayer after the Italian government took a decision to ban oil drilling near the coast. The Italian government did that over environmental concerns and a local protest against oil drilling. And that amount the Rockhopper is suing for is between 7 and 9 times what they actually invested in the project. So that's sort of the lost profit elements, potential future profits that ISDS enables corporations to sue for. Meanwhile, in Germany, the Energy Charter Treaty has made the German coal phase out far more expensive. The government has accepted serious disadvantages in terms of its compensation it's had to pay to these corporations and has paid around 12 times more to the coal companies than they would have otherwise had to pay because of the Energy Charter Treaty. So you might well wonder why countries would sign up to this, why they're still members of this treaty, and why have we not terminated it already? And the answer is that things are moving and we're actually at a really critical juncture right now, which is why we're holding this event and why we're engaged in all of this this action. Italy has left the treaty a number of years ago. Countries in Europe that have faced high numbers of cases, so Spain, as well as Poland and Germany, have expressed support for the possibility of leaving the treaty, but they haven't committed to doing it. So the battle is really far from won, and we really have to step up pressure on governments within the next few weeks to try and make this a success. At this very moment, this week, governments are meeting to try to decide the future of the treaty. One of the options on the table is to not to exit, but to merely amend it in a modernization process that has, to be honest, been doomed from the start because it never really mentioned climate change or the need to align with the Paris Agreement or to address ISDS. it was an attempt to re-legitimize something that has been losing legitimacy for a long time. And that's why we're here today, to say we won't compromise on our future. We want our governments to leave the Energy Charter Treaty without delay. And I'm going to turn to our speakers now to tell you from their perspective as climate, social justice activists, scientists, lawyers, why we have to leave ISDS and leave the Energy Charter Treaty in the past. So I'll pass on, first of all, to Carola Riqueta, who is, I'm sure, can do a much better job of introducing herself, but she's a German ship captain who volunteered with the German sea rescue organization Sea-Watch. In 2019, she was arrested for docking a migrant rescue ship and was without authorization. And she has, in November 2021, published a call to combat climate action, The Time to Act Is Now. So I'll hand over to you, Carola. She will be speaking in English.
Thank you very much for organizing this very important webinar, first of all, and for everyone who took the time to join today. I'm not specifically now speaking about the ECT because that will be left to other speakers, but speaking as an ecologist and direct action activist specifically. It's really important, I think, that we realize that a climate crisis is not an accident, but a crime, and that we have to work together to stop the harm and hold accountable those who are responsible. It is important to find the ECT, but at the same time, we must not forget to engage directly and end this dark age of fossil fuels by winding down the fossil fuel industry and the extraction as quickly as possible. And I would just like to remind each of us that everyone has their part to play as direct action activists, lawyers, policymakers, industrial workers, scientists, teachers, students, artists. Each one of us has to engage with the skills and experience that we have. And we have to work together to the same direction. At this moment, it's really paramount to prevent new fossil fuel projects or accelerate the shutdown of the already existing infrastructure. In Germany, we have seen that the huge pressure by the grassroots movement has led to an earlier coal phase out, now moved to 2030. And this grassroots movement really critically included the autonomous forest occupations in the area of Hambach. But the direct action, the occupations, and the civil disobedience are really important ways to confront and accelerate the decision making, but only when supported and moving hand in hand with a broader civil society movement. But this only can be the first step, because really we have to take control of and wind down the fossil fuel companies like RWE or Wintershall, which are the biggest in Germany. We need the workers across all parts of the fossil fuel sectors to hold accountable the companies from the inside, but also to get public support to transition towards work that provides dignity, self-direction, and planetary safety for people. In Europe, we also have to stand in solidarity with people on the front lines who struggle against European companies fueling the climate crisis. For example, we must join people in Tanzania and Uganda who fight Total regarding the new pipeline project EACOP, the East African crude oil pipeline, or SOCO and Total, who are planning to extract in the Democratic Republic of Congo in a protected area that is called Virunga and is actually also riddled with a lot of colonial structures and human rights abuses. A new global focus for sure is also fossil gas and fracking projects. In Germany, for example, a huge focus is now to prevent the building of new terminals. I believe if we live in the global north, we must also include or connect the fracking overseas to the fracking at home. Because in countries like France or the UK or Germany, there are decades of resistance in local citizens' initiatives. If we do not want fracked gas from our own alpine hills of picturesque Bavaria, for example, we cannot allow to import the same gas from Vaca Muerta, the Yamal Peninsula, or the Okavango Delta. And I would like to add a final word of caution as an ecologist. The survival of us and our families is strongly tied to the survival of earthworms and ants and all the millions of unknown species that comprise healthy ecosystems. Therefore, the struggle for our common future must include assuming responsibility and stewardship for the living planet. We must not replace fossil fuel projects by other industries that are harmful to the living planet. And according to the International Expert Panel on the Biodiversity, it's only possible if we abandon the paradigm of economic growth. We need a transition that is based on restorative justice and respects our responsibilities and dependence on the living planet. Finally, I'd like to remind you there's a lot to do to end the dark ages of fossil fuels. Do not forget that each of you has a very crucial part to play in the story of transformation. And there are many ways to take part in action, legal and citizen initiatives in workplaces, in land occupations. Each of them is needed and important, and each of you is very crucial to winning. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak on this rally. First of all, I think this is not even just an issue that Uganda faces, but something that is happening globally. And what we are seeing at the moment is that there is a silent expansion of this Energy Charter Treaty, especially within the Global South, that is Africa and Latin America. I know we've had discussions and conversations that there's a modernization going on, but at the same time, we've also seen that there's always a budget for the ECT Secretariat, specifically for the expansion. So that clearly shows us that actually, even at the moment, expansion is still going on. So we wouldn't even want to think that maybe it has been put to a halt as we think about modernization. Uganda and Africa as a whole, we are least developed countries to start with. And for that reason, there is much need for us to attract FDI. And because of this very much need, especially within the energy sector, you see, when you look at countries like Uganda, where I am, our access to electricity is as low as 20% and as low as 40% for the entire Africa. So it shows you how much we're going to see states coming up and wanting to, attract investment so that they can be able to exploit that energy sector and maybe provide electricity access for everyone, which is quite a challenge. And what we've seen oftentimes is that because of this need to attract FDIs, there's a growing recognition of bilateral investment treaties and other investment agreements. And in 2019, we saw Uganda coming out to send a letter to the ECT Secretariat expressing interest to join the ECT. First of all, had a lot of issues regarding that particular line. The fact that even when you look at how the ECT is framed, it targets ministries that have not ideally been handled in negotiations, because I don't know how it's done out there, but for countries like Uganda, you know that negotiations will either fall under the ministry in charge of finance or maybe trade. But you see here, talking about a whole different ministry, which means even the negotiating capacity may not be that strong, and we see them being persuaded to perhaps take a position that would be detrimental to a country. And this goes on because we've seen other countries now, our colleagues within the EAC, like Burundi, we saw that they're even at the last stage of ratifying this Energy Charter Treaty. Yet, last year, we saw Burundi government coming out to suspend all the mining contracts that it has. And for me, that triggered my mind to think about the likelihood of, if for instance they had ratified the Energy Charter Treaty, what that would mean, because we saw that part of the mining companies that were in Burundi, some of them are even operating under bilateral investment treaties like Burundi and UK. So it triggered my mind to think of what would actually happen if there was already this ECT in place, looking at the way it is structured and those problematic clauses that are in it, including clauses to do with the zombie clauses and how much they would have to pay in terms of investor-state dispute settlements. So I think as a country and as a continent that is already, first of all, struggling to because of the debt burden and a lot of resources being lost out there, we are not prepared to take in this Energy Charter Treaty. And this is why we have been quite vocal in trying to tell, to convince our government to say that we think that there's need to debunk that myth that all the problems we have as a continent, especially facing the energy sector, will be solved by just a mere document, which is the Energy Charter Treaty. And just beyond that, there are also a lot of risks, especially when it comes to climate change. And this is something that this is a call that we've put out globally. When you look at the way this Energy Charter Treaty takes away the sovereignty of the states to act, for instance, we've always had campaigns. Recently, we had a campaign in Lamu, in Kenya, saying that we should stop Lamu. We've had a campaign going on in Uganda to say that we should stop distracting Bungoma Forest. I think we have that liberty to even put up a campaign, and sometimes our governments listen to us. But the moment we've become party or ratified this Energy Charter Treaty, it means we have given away our rights as a country or as a continent to even act in the interest of the public, meaning we've given away our sovereignty, and where does that leave us? For me, I would actually want to understand the framers of this Energy Charter Treaty. Why, for instance, would anyone put up the zombie clause that says even after you exit, you can still be held liable 26 years after? It shows you that this particular agreement is beyond just maybe investment in the energy sector, but rather focuses on protecting these particular investors. At Siatini, we run a campaign that is dubbed Life Before Profit, saying that in whatever we do, we should prioritize the rights of the citizens, of the communities, of the host states. But if we are so much interested in this, in exploiting our energy resources, and we don't put to the front the rights of the citizens, we're going to have a country or a continent that has no people anymore, that, cannot defend its sovereignty when it comes to protecting its environment.
COP27 is being held in Egypt, as already been mentioned. It's not being held in Cairo, it's being held in Sharm el-Sheikh. And there will be people here who have probably been to Sinai. Sharm el-Sheikh is a resort on the Sinai coast. It can very easily be isolated from the rest of Egypt. And that is why the Egyptian government has held various international meetings there. It will be impenetrable to activists. And the record of the Sisi regime, as you know, in terms of repression, broad human rights interests, issues, and so on, is deplorable. The chance of domestic activists from Egypt or others participating in any way is pretty much nil. Egyptian activists are now networking to prepare a type of inclusive statement, which I think they will be putting to ourselves and to others to highlight some of the issues in Egypt. Because, just to identify the problem there, Egypt is the largest oil producer in Africa outside OPEC. There's been a recent enormous a discovery of an enormous new gas field there. And the Egyptian government is working flat out to build three massive gas-fired power stations. All this is going on while the Egyptian government has failed to set any target for emissions. So for the regime, COP27 presents a fantastic greenwashing opportunity against the background, not only of the issues I've just mentioned, but against a background of the most extreme repression. And you probably know that the present regime came to power after a military coup in 2013. So Egyptian activists, people involved in NGOs, human rights organizations, charitable organizations, and so on, are looking for ways to express their views about this. There is no, not really even an inch of room for manoeuvre for them. And they will have to, they will be wanted to be very creative and work really through international solidarity networks. So I can't, of course, speak on behalf of them. I'm just passing on the knowledge that I have of what they would like to do and how they would like to collaborate with other activists in the Global South and also with ourselves, so that some of the issues around COP27 are really openly aired from their point of view. Thank you.
Yeah, that was just a little insight into corporate leaners and the holding of climate goals to ransom. But before we go, quickly, we've got Paulie Stewart. He woke up.